Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi friends, I'm Tim Whitaker and welcome to the New Evangelicals podcast. The New Evangelicals is an inclusive, Jesus-centered community that holds space for people marginalized by the evangelical church, advocates for accountability in the church, and helps you explore the Christian tradition beyond the basement of evangelical fundamentalism. This podcast is part of that work, so join us as we talk to people from all walks of life, lending their expertise and wisdom to us as we renegotiate our faith and find better paths forward. What is up, friends? Hello. Welcome to a Friday edition of the podcast. I have a lot to go over with you today. I'm excited to share some things. The first thing you should know is that I am currently drinking 7-Eleven blueberry coffee. That's right. I'm not sure if you follow us on Instagram, but this has become quite the controversy because it's apparent to me that there are a lot of folks out there who have not deconstructed from their coffee fundamentalism. Okay, I posted maybe a couple months ago that I've been really enjoying this 7-Eleven blueberry coffee. I put a little bit of French vanilla creamer in it, and it's delicious. It slaps. And all of a sudden, these coffee fundamentalists, these coffee snobs come out. Oh, how dare you? I'm ashamed. They're sending me like that little vomit emoji. And you know what? I stood firm. I was not going to submit to the cancel culture calling for my head for enjoying 7-Eleven blueberry coffee. So I've been on a mission. Yes, that's right. I've been on a mission to spread the good news that 7-Eleven, their blueberry coffee and their French vanilla creamer, that concoction is potent. In fact, the person who produces this podcast, Noah, I finally got him to try some. He was in town last week, and I'll explain to you why it's very important. I got him to finally try it, and I recorded the reaction. I posted on Instagram. He was shocked. He said, "This is really good." So even coffee snobs like Noah, people who admit they are coffee snobs, that there is more than one way to drink coffee. I want to put that out there. I would encourage you, go to your local 7-Eleven, try some 7-Eleven blueberry coffee, get back to me. And I would love to hear your thoughts because I'm telling you, it is delicious. It is freaking delicious. So why was Noah in town? Well, a couple of weeks ago, I flew out Adele. She is like our director of strategy and helps me out with like branding and thinking about. She's someone who herds all the cats in my head. That's what she does. I call her and I'm like, Adele, I have so many thoughts. I feel stuck. I need help. So I flew her out. Noah lives about an hour and a half away. He drove over for a weekend and we spent... Well, Adele and I spent about 4 days total, and Noah hopped in on day two. We spent several days looking at all of the content that we do as an organization. I got so many thoughts that were in my head out on paper, and I've been thinking a lot about this because we have Project Amplify. It's this huge campaign we launched to help amplify credible voices. So what does that look like? How do we do that in ways that are responsible with the money that folks have donated, and also ways that are ethical that really do elevate more and more voices, especially in this election year, which we know is so volatile and so much is happening. And we're going to get into a lot of that data in this episode. PRI's data on Christian nationalism. I know I talked to Andrew Whitehead a little bit about it, but there's a lot more here that we did not get to that I want to unpack. I shared it on my Instagram stories. People asked me questions. I'm going to respond to some of those questions here. We'll get into all that. So Adele, Noah, and I, we sat down, we unpacked everything. And honestly, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the organization, and we got a lot of great language figured out for, okay, who's the audience? What needs are we trying to fill? How do they feel seen? How do we build stronger communities and all that good stuff? So I can't share it with you just yet because we're working on like all the assets to make sure that this is a very clean transition. But I am saying that there is more of an organizational structure coming to the podcast and YouTube formats. I know that for a lot of you, you probably get random updates. Oh, new episode on Tuesday, new episode on Thursday. Here's one randomly on Friday where Tim's monologuing. I know. And part of my struggle, I'm not very organized, if you can't tell. Sometimes creatives like me have a hard time getting structured and organized, especially when you're dealing with content that's always changing, right? If I open up my news app on Friday, my plans might totally shift if there's breaking news. So Adele and I worked on a strategy to build out consistent podcast content. We're going to have 3 episodes a week coming consistently, and we're going to break down how we're going to explain them as subgenres of our content. I am really freaking excited. I'm also excited because, and I don't want to tease too much, I will just tell you that we're going to have a Friday episode, and I'm going to have a permanent co-host for that Friday style episode. That's all I'll say for now. I will announce more later on, but I want you to know that this is your Project Amplify donations in action. This is what you believed in, and we are working feverishly behind the scenes to get organized, to build a structure that can support the weight of all the different types of content we want to do that will also amplify more credible voices. We are also working on YouTube. We brought on a video editor for the next 3 months as a test run to help me with more, just with kind of offloading the editing burden off of me onto them. That will hopefully give me more consistent YouTube content as well. We have a lot of ideas for that. We're going to be bringing the podcast over to YouTube more often and do some other cool things. So I'm really excited. Now, one of the things, and I just want to be honest with you, part of my of who I am is just I can't withhold things from you. It feels weird. And maybe this is TMI. Maybe you just don't care. Maybe you're like, Tim, get to the data. Okay, we'll get to that. But I feel an obligation to always be transparent with you, the audience, because I know that there's so much trust built up between you and me. And that's important to me. I don't take that for granted. I realized in this process that because I built TNE originally off of Instagram, if Instagram wasn't doing well as a channel, according to my internal metrics of growth and success and engagement, I felt like we weren't doing a good job. I felt I would get depressed and frustrated and anxious if a reel I did or posted didn't do that well, or we didn't grow as fast as I was hoping. And so I'm really working on shifting my mentality for how we define success, because while, of course, Instagram is super important and this, I feel so connected to you all in real time on Instagram, I know long term the podcast and YouTube format is where we need to move into more consistently. There are massive audiences and also people who are looking for a better way forward in their faith. And the podcast and YouTube world, I think, is still a very largely untapped market for us, an untapped segment. And I know you as the audience, I get such great feedback that you love the show and you share the show, and we are growing as a podcast. But I want to spend more energy to bring you more quality content on podcasts too. It's not just a matter of trying to find more listeners or anything like that. It's also about how do I give you more consistently solid content? How do I give you really compelling interviews, really compelling responses, really compelling news stories, et cetera? So I am working on shifting my mindset from, oh my God, I have to post on Instagram every day and always have a reel out, to, okay, I still need to do that. Of course, we have to be active there, but how do I make more time, right, for some of these other things that I want to do? And part of that too, I mean, listen, pragmatically, just even selfishly, podcast ad revenue is really helpful to us right now. Tube has a massive opportunity to also bring in extra income for the organization to help us do better work. So there is also that element, but frankly, long form content is just the best. I love long form content. I love talking to you. I love getting into the weeds on things. Our responses that we do perform really well, which is a metric that tells me you guys really like when we take an hour and a half, 2 hours to respond to Mark Driscoll with a credible voice, or Or like, for example, on Wednesday, I did a live with my friend Billy responding to the Libs of TikTok interview. That's on YouTube now. It will eventually come out on podcast. I know you all like that. So anyway, there are some shifts already started. When we have all the assets in place and all of like the language for it that we're going to use consistently, I will let you know and we'll make the change as kind of an announcement. But I'm very excited. I am very excited. Last thing I wanted to mention before we get into this PRRI data is that we do have slots available for ads. If you're looking to promote your business, your organization, maybe a product or an event, reach out to me. I would love to work with you. We are offering a 50% discount to anyone who hears this and wants to do an ad with us. So shoot me an email, info@thenewevangelicals. We'd love to get you out there and help and get you in front of the audience and we can work something out. So, all right. That being said, friends, thanks for listening to all that. Like I said, I'm super excited. One thing I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about today is this new data set from the PRRI Institute. The report is called Support for Christian Nationalism in All 50 States, Findings from PRRI's 2023 American Values Atlas. They surveyed over 22,000 adults over the course of 2023, and they believe, PRRI, they estimate that this is the first time we're able to measure support for Christian nationalism in all 50 states, okay? Now, if you listened to last Friday's episode, me and Andrew kind of went through some of the big picture stuff, but just to recap you, the organization PRRI, they used 5 primary questions to determine if someone held to some level of Christian nationalism. So here are the 5 statements, just to refresh your mind. The U.S. government should declare America a Christian nation. U.S. laws should be based on Christian values. If the U.S. moves away from our Christian foundations, we will not have a country anymore. Being a Christian is an important part of being truly American. God has called Christians to exercise dominion over all areas of society. Depending on how strongly respondents agreed or disagreed, they get rated a value that translates into 1 of 4 categories. Christian nationalism adherent, this is someone who would overwhelmingly agree with those 5 statements or completely agree. Christian nationalism sympathizers, these are people who would maybe agree with most of the statements, but not all, and they are less likely than adherents to completely agree. And then you have Christian nationalism skeptics. These are folks who disagree with most of the statements. And then, of course, Christian nationalism rejectors, they completely disagree. So here's how it breaks down, all right? This is the current snapshot of the American population. About 10% of the U.S. population are Christian nationalism adherents. Think about these people as like your Charlie Kirks of the world, folks who are super strongly on board for all 5 of those statements. Then you have your sympathizers. That's 20% of the U.S. population. And then you have 37% of the U.S. population are skeptics and 30% rejectors. So in short, about 30% of Americans, 3 out of 10, adhere to Christian nationalism in some way, shape, or form. And about 67% reject Christian nationalism in some way, shape, or form. Now, it depends on how you look at this data. In one sense, 3 out of 10 is not a small amount. That's millions of people, but it's not the majority. It's not even close to a majority. Of course, the difference, though, is the access to power that Christian nationalism has. I mean, we've covered this many, many times in the podcast, but there are people who are billionaires who give to a lot of these causes. For example, Turning Point USA did $80 million in funding last year. A lot of that came from grassroots, but a lot of it did not. And I believe it was in the year 2022, about 10 major donors funded half of Turning Point USA's budget. Okay, so there is a lot of access to wealth and power in Christian nationalism that does get people positioned in places that have a lot of sway. One example, of course, is in Alabama, right? The recent Supreme Court decision where you have the state say, hey, embryos are children, and we have to stop IVF essentially, right? I mean, they're still working out the details, but a lot of places have stopped and there are a lot of embryos on ice right now. They're not sure what to do with it. But one of the justices who was in favor of that ruling quoted the Bible in his ruling and also was on a podcast recently where he emphasized his belief in the 7 mountain mandate, right? The belief that Christians have an obligation and a calling to rule over the 7 spheres of influence. So again, it's not so much about the numbers 3 out of 10, that is not the majority. But when you have just one person in a place of power that can shape law, it's obviously very impactful. So of course, in this data set, and I will link the full report so you can go through it yourself. You can also go to our Instagram. I have a whole highlight on this with all the visuals so you can kind of skim through it. But essentially, it breaks down in the US population where the southern part of the US and like all the way to like the Northwest, there's a good band of states that lean very heavily Christian nationalists. Like, so for example, Mississippi, 50% of the population holds the Christian nationalist ideals compared to a state like California or New Jersey, which is 22% or 20%. So there definitely is on the map correlation to more Republican states do have more leanings and more sympathies and full-on beliefs of Christian nationalism. And this matters, by the way, friends, especially with battleground states, right? So again, PRRI, they mapped out some of the key battleground states and how it breaks down. So in battleground states, that's like your Pennsylvanias, et cetera, about 29% of the populations of those states are either adherents or sympathizers of Christian nationalism. 3 out of 10 is a major voting block. They have a lot of power to sway certain elections. And yes, in case it's not obvious, Christian nationalism is directly correlated with the support of Trump, especially among white Christian nationalist supporters. And we're going to dig into this because there's actually some data in here that was very surprising to me. Okay, so keep that in mind.
Hello, my name is Sharon Roggio. I am the director of 1946, the movie. We know that there is harmful rhetoric that seeps into our culture that sometimes comes from our church buildings. We know the impact of fundamentalist theology that is designed to uplift certain groups and marginalize others. We also recognize that this is an issue that needs to be dealt with care and empathy, as oftentimes it is our loved ones who uphold these beliefs. And that is why I support Project Amplify. Never in our lives have we been more inundated with misinformation and disinformation, but Project Amplify provides good information and a middle ground to give us some hope around a lot of this misguided information and beliefs. If you'd like to help Project Amplify, please consider a donation today, and you can find out more with the click in the link below. Thank you.
So Christian nationalism is mostly connected to partisanship. About 55% of Republicans qualify as Christian nationalists, and that breaks down as 21% being the adherents, that's your Charlie Kirks, and 34% being sympathizers. This does make them twice as likely to hold Christian nationalist views compared to independents, which is only about 25%, and three times as likely as Democrats, which is 16%. So this does break it is divided by party lines in many, many respects. So how about when it comes to news sources? Again, this might not be super surprising to you, but Christian nationalism or we could say people who hold to these views do find far-right news sources like OAN, that's I believe called One American News, and Newsmax. About 67% of Christian nationalists find those places as trustworthy, and also Fox News as well. 55% of Christian nationalist adherents, sympathizers found Fox News trustworthy. So again, there is a correlation with that completely. One interesting thing about this is that among skeptics and rejectors, about 69% of them said, "We do not watch TV news." I thought that was interesting. So just a fascinating thing about how even on the other side of this conversation, there's a different perspective that says, actually, I don't watch TV news at all. That was only second to mainstream news, which again is not shocking, right? Because most people who reject Christian nationalism are going to find your CNNs, your ABCs, your more legacy news media as more trustworthy. So let's break this down by race. Now, this is where things get interesting. Stay with me here. Among racial lines, Christian nationalism is pretty even, except in the AAPI community. All right, that's Asian American Pacific Islander community. But among white folks, about 30% are a combination of adherents and sympathizers. Among the black community, about 32% identify as adherents or sympathizers. And then Hispanic, about 29%. And then multiracial, 27%. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, this doesn't add up. How is the Black population, when they were polled, if anything, 2 percentage points higher when it comes to adhering or sympathizing with those, with one of those five statements or all of those five statements that we read earlier? Stay with me, okay? I will explain, because I will tell you I was very perplexed myself in the beginning of this. But let's keep moving on. When it comes to religious affiliation, what segment of our religious makeup is most Christian nationalist? Well, shocker alert, ding, 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 it is white evangelical Protestants. About 66% of white evangelical Protestants hold to either Christian nationalist views strongly or sympathetically. And it's actually pretty split. 30% of white evangelical Protestants are adherents. That's the Charlie Kirk vibe. And 36% are sympathizers. That's a big breakdown. In Hispanic Protestant spaces, 22% are adherents, 33% sympathizers. Latter-day Saints are third here, 13% adherents, 29% sympathizers. And then we have Black Protestant, 15% adherents, 24 sympathizers. And then you have the white, you know, white mainline evangelical Protestants, white Catholics, etc. And again, I have this on our Instagram highlights. You can go there and see the full graph. But yeah, it's no shocker to us, especially as folks who were birthing this movement, right, that white evangelical Protestants are by far the strongest, most arduent, or is it arduent? Is that the word? Yeah, I think it is. Arduent, if it's not, correct me, I'm sorry. But they are the strongest supporters of Christian nationalism. The only thing that really changed over time, according to PRRI, is that Hispanic Protestants, that number went up 12 percentage points since 2022. So white evangelical spaces, not super shocking. It's kind of what we've always known. Another important factor to know is that when it comes to support for Christian nationalism by evangelical identification and race, is that people who identify as evangelical or born again are far more likely to hold Christian nationalist views compared to those who do not identify as either of those. So for example, a white Christian who doesn't use the moniker evangelical or born again is 30% likely to have Christian nationalist views. But if you are a white evangelical Christian or born again Christian, that number doubles. And that's pretty much down the board for any race, whether it's multiracial, Hispanic, AAPI, or Black, the number doubles or is even higher than that if you identify as evangelical or born again. So I think that's fascinating, because it demonstrates how this evangelical born again language that really comes out of white evangelicalism, if other racial groups are absorbed into it, they become more likely to support those five statements that PRRI used to measure Christian nationalist sympathies or strongly associated views. So I thought that was fascinating. And the other big piece that's very key here is there was some debate in previous polls and surveys about the religiosity of Christian nationalists. There were some people that said, well, according to our data, the more Christian nationalist someone is, the less likely they are to attend church or be religious. But this data set, and I honestly do see PRRI as one of the most authoritative here, they said, no, we found that the opposite is true. We have found that 55% of Americans who report reading the Bible weekly or more hold Christian nationalist views. 52% of Americans who attend religious services weekly or more hold Christian nationalist views. So there is some correlation there. And the other even more crazy thing is that I was not ready for is that the report found that charismatic / Pentecostal beliefs like physical healing, prayer, prophecy, prosperity, gospel kind of theology were held by 79% of Christian nationalist adherents and 70% of sympathizers. Now, this is a conversation for me and Matt Taylor. If you know anything about our podcast or who we like to talk to, Matt Taylor is someone who I'm a huge fan of. He tracks the New Apostolic Reformation and Christian nationalism. So I'm working on getting him on the show to unpack that. But again, very, very fascinating. How about violence? Are Christian nationalists more likely to hold violent views about political revolution? Yes. According to this data, Christian nationalists are more likely than other Americans to see political struggle through the apocalyptic lens of revolution and violence. 54% of adherents and 45% of sympathizers believe there is a storm coming that will sweep away the elites in power and restore the rightful leader. So, now, here's where things get a little bizarre. How does Christian nationalism break down by race and party allegiance? All right, now this is where Remember when I said earlier, you probably have a question about the Black American polling here and the Christian nationalism identity. How does this work? Well, here's another curveball for you. White Americans and Hispanic Americans who hold Christian nationalist beliefs are strongly correlated with Republican Party identity. That would be 65% of white Christian nationalists identify as Republican. And, well, they're the highest for the record. But Hispanics are at 32% identify with the Republican Party. But Black Christian nationalists, so to speak, are only 8%. So to sum this up, while 32% of Black Americans hold Christian nationalist beliefs as defined by those five questions, only 8% are Republicans. And it gets even stranger when you see, and again, this is all on our Instagram highlight, that white and Hispanic Christian nationalist adherents and sympathizers, they do have strong support for Trump. Okay, 71% of white adherents and sympathizers like Trump, 51% of Hispanics like Trump. But when it comes to, again, Black Christian nationalist adherents and sympathizers, 21% support Trump and 62% are in favor for Biden. So I was perplexed by this. Well, this is weird. The math is not mathing. So I actually texted Jamar Tisby. I'm a huge fan of Jamar. We become friends. And I said, hey, help me understand this, because he's someone who was actually on the webinar when PRI released this to kind of explain some of this stuff. So I'll put a link in the show notes. It's minute 30. You can watch his whole recap here. But he helped me understand the difference. And so essentially, and I'm going to give you a very condensed version here. But first, you should know this. Black Americans are some of the most religious people in America. And the second reason for this is actually quite simple. When the Black community sees those five questions that PRI asked, they interpret them very differently than other groups of people. And that makes sense, because the Black Christian tradition was formed under very different circumstances in America, right? We're talking about circumstances of oppression, marginalization, violence, racism, etc. So like the civil rights movement was very much a Christian movement, but it wasn't based on taking over and using power to control others. It was based on fighting for the equity of Black Americans in the face of a violent empire steeped in racism and white supremacy. So there's a very different imagery being seen here in the mind of like someone who would be Black and see those five statements. They're not thinking about January 6th. They're thinking about MLK and the Civil Rights Act and demanding voting rights and that legacy of people using their Christian faith, viewing the world through a very Christian framework that, hey, you know, we are a Christian country and that, you know, God's blessing has been on the country. And the result, though, is not white Christian nationalist sympathies of, you know, the groomers and we have to bring God back to America in the sense of white evangelicalism. It is based on the legacy, right, of fighting for equity in a country that historically has marginalized those people. So this is why, and for the record, again, in Jamar's webinar, he says this is why it's important to keep the white in white Christian nationalism. And this is also why Trump and the Republican Party are so widely opposed by Black Christian nationalist adherents and sympathizers. Very different understanding and perspective of those five initial statements. So this was important for me to parse out, because I really was confused. I'm like, whoa, that's a high percentage, but it means something very different in the mind of Black America. Now, of course, I'm generalizing here. There's always going to be people that are going to cross over those lines, right? There are white evangelicals who are not Christian nationalist sympathizers, and there are probably Black Christians out there who hold to those Christian nationalist sympathies and views in the way that white Americans do. So it's not monolithic, but that helped me make a lot more sense out of the low support for Trump, high support of Biden in these Black evangelical and Christian spaces, yet 32% still hold these views of feeling strongly in the affirming of those five statements that I read. So I'm still parsing this out. I'm going to see if I can get Jamar on to maybe go into a deeper dive on this for sure. But anyway, that was the data. Now, I did do a Q&A on Instagram. I didn't respond to these in the stories. I figured I would go through a few of them here and answer them, and then I'll share this to a podcast. So someone asked me, will this data change how TNE approaches content? Not really. I will be more specific to use the term white Christian nationalism. We want to be clear on what we're critiquing and why we find these views problematic, broadly speaking. but it's not going to change, you know, how we approach the content or anything like that. If anything, it just reinforces that we should keep going down the path that we've been going, which is really sounding the alarm on Christian nationalism. People have asked me, can I make this a highlight? I obviously did already, so it's definitely on there. Someone asked, do I know of any organizations that do this kind of research in Canada? I do not. So if I hear of one, I will definitely put it on podcasts and on the Instagram stories. Do you think there's any way to get through to people we know that adhere to this thinking? Well, I don't know. I think this is the million-dollar question for a lot of reasons. I think it depends on the person. Do I think that Charlie Kirk is going to be swayed? No. He has too much riding on this. He has reputation. He has money. He has power. He has access to power. He is sitting down with former presidents. That is a very alluring place to be. And he probably thinks that because of his success, God is blessing him. So I don't think we're going to change Charlie. Do I think people in our immediate sphere of friendships can be persuaded? I do. But you have to use wisdom when navigating that because you know the friend you're thinking about right now. I know the person I'm thinking about. And I know based on that, on me knowing that person, how likely it can be that I can persuade them to think differently. And based on that, I'll either engage or I won't. But I would say, especially the adherents, the real strong supporters, I don't know how we do that. I always want to have a posture of openness and being willing to invite people into better ways of thinking. But at the same time, white Christian nationalism is so detrimental to America. It's so detrimental to democracy, to pluralism, to marginalized folks, to Black Americans, to, you know, disabled Americans, queer Americans, et cetera. I just don't know. I don't know if that's the best use of our time is trying to convince the adherents. I think sympathizers, there's more of an opportunity there for sure. All right. Someone asked, why do states on both coasts have lower rates of acceptance on Christian nationalism? It's probably tied to the fact that coastal states tend to lean more liberal and not so much Republican. It's probably tied to that directly. Let's see here. Any other good questions? I think that's all the ones I wanted to get to. Just a few I got. Most people were really happy that I put the breakdown together on Instagram. And again, friends, it is totally available on our Instagram highlights. You can go there right now. But I did want to spend a couple minutes today updating you on some TNE stuff. And I wanted to really break down the PRRI data for you. That way you're more in the know. Of course, this is so important to me. You know, I'm so passionate about this. Especially because my faith tradition birthed so much of this. And I just sense, I have a real sense of obligation to do everything I can to let people know what is coming because many folks, especially in the adherent category, are militant in what they believe. And they truly believe that God has given them a special authority to take over the country. And I see too much. I hear too often what they're advocating for and it's not good. It's not good at all. So hopefully this was helpful for you. Hopefully this is encouraging and enlightening so you know what's going on, how the data breaks down. I'm sure I'll get a few guests on the podcast over the next few weeks to hopefully unpack more of this and get into more of the nitty gritty, but that's a good high level overview. Thank you so much, friends, for listening. Great talking to you. Have a great weekend. I'll be back here on Monday with another interview with a new guest. Talk to y'all later on.